much for coming. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Mel Bunce, and I'm a senior lecturer here in the Journalism Department. A few years ago, a couple of colleagues and I set up something called the Humanitarian News Research Network, and our goal with that network was to have events exactly like this one, where we could bring people together, journalists, researchers, practitioners, students, people interested in humanitarian communications, to talk about how we can do journalism better, to talk about how NGOs can communicate about crises better, to think about how we can get trustworthy information about all sorts of humanitarian issues to the people that need it the most. And we've had all sorts of fantastic events over the last couple of years. This summer we had a great one looking at disinformation and fake news and humanitarian crises. We have a great one coming up on the 6th of November. We're actually going to have a play written by one of our staff members, Dr. Glenda Cooper. Hey, Glenda. which is a really special kind of chance to think about these issues in a different way through a play performance, where they act as a playing with the idea of how we represent distant crises. But tonight's event is all about humanitarian journalism. And it's particularly special to me because it is what we're going to do tonight is present some of the research findings from a project I've been working on for a couple of years now with two colleagues, Dr. Martin Scott here from the University of East Anglia and Dr. Kate Wright from the University of Edinburgh. And we've been working on this for a little while. What's going to happen is Kate's going to talk a little bit about the project and what we've been trying to do. Martin's going to present some of the kind of headline findings very briefly. And then what we're going to do is invite up a panel of fantastic journalists and media commentators to discuss the state of humanitarian journalism today and to answer our questions, those of you in the audience, and I'll give them a few questions as well. After that, we've got a refreshment break, and we're going to move to a different part of the campus and have a screening of the documentary Another News Story. We're really, really happy to be screening that tonight because it's a fantastic documentary and we've got the director and the producer here to talk a little bit about it. It follows the journalists and the migrants during the refugee crisis in Europe in 2015. And part of why I think it's a really fantastic addition to the event that we're having tonight is that sometimes when we have these events and we talk a lot about the journalists and the NGOs and so on, we don't focus enough about the people who are caught up in the crises themselves. And the documentary does a fantastic job of following the migrants and their experiences being caught up within that kind of media storm that they didn't necessarily want to be in, and kind of capturing that side of the situation. So I hope you'll stay on and join us. We've then, after all of that, if you make it to the end, we've got loads of wine and canapés and lots of people who are happy to talk and answer questions and think more about humanitarian communication. So we'll kind of have a bit of a movable feast because we're going to move from here together to refreshments over in an area called the Pavilion, so if you're in the university building. So if you're not familiar with the campus, just follow a student or a staff member or one of us who knows where we're going, but we'll point the way. Right, so that's all I'm going to say for now before I come back and introduce the panel. I'm going to hand over to my colleague Kate Wright. Who does not need a microphone either, I hope.
I hope not. Hello. It's lovely to be here with you all today. I've come down from the University of Edinburgh, where I'm the academic lead for the Research and Communications Cluster. This project has been sort of quite a long time in the making. Do we have any PhD students in the room? Yes, the friendships you make now can serve you well for a very long time. Like some of my colleagues here tonight, I used to work at the BBC, first on the Today programme, but please don't throw things at me, and then at the BBC World Service. And during that time, you cover quite a few wars, quite a few disasters, and you learn that reporting on humanitarian issues is difficult, it's often politically fraught, it's often exhausting, and so when I moved into academia, I got quite frustrated. When I would read theory about, well, journalists cover humanitarian crises like this, or they construct humanitarian emergencies like that. And in conversation with Martin and Mel, we were saying to each other, well, which journalists, under which circumstances, for which news organisations, with which kind of time or financial resources, with which kinds of constraints, seemed a very undif- differentiated way of looking at humanitarian reporting to me. So when we got the opportunity to watch, and it was kind of like being stalked for a little while, Erin, while they moved from being part of the UN to going independent for a year, we grabbed that opportunity. And throughout that year, we became fascinated with the political economies of humanitarian news outlets, the niche news outlets, but also those who practice humanitarian reporting within the big beasts, if you like, the BBC, the Al Jazeera's, the CGTN's, Chinese news outlets, for those of you who don't know, or Xinhua, or AP, or AFP. And what we wanted to do is put together a project that really gives people an idea of the differences between different news outlets, between different approaches to humanitarian reporting, because there's not just one way of doing it. So to tell you some more about that, my colleague Martin Scott.
Okay, hello everyone. So I've been given 20 minutes then to summarise the work of three lecturers for the best part of 3 years, to some students and some journalists and other academics and PhD students. So instead of doing that, I'm going to give you just the highlights of what I think are the key things you might be most interested in knowing from our research. The first question for us, as Kate set up nicely, is if we're going to study this, we need to know who are the central actors, or defining that question has been an ongoing project for us. Nevertheless, our key question, who does regularly report on humanitarian affairs? So, to answer that question, we attempted to answer it in three different ways. Firstly, we looked at who actually does report on humanitarian crises. So we started by commissioning the media monitoring company Kantar to search its database of 20,000 news organisations to look at which ones produced original coverage of four particular issues related to humanitarian affairs. So the World Humanitarian Summit, the crisis in South Sudan, the UN appeal 2017 for humanitarian aid, and an earthquake in Indonesia. Our question was, which news organisations covered, in an original way, those four issues? And this is our answer. 12 news organisations out of slightly less than 20,000. That is, the top four you'd probably expect, big international news agencies who sell their content on to others. Then the next four, big international broadcasters, Al Jazeera, BBC in particular, BBC World Service, but also Voice of America and CGTN from China. So eight you might have expected, not France 24, not Deutsche Welle, not several of the other big ones. And the remaining ones, The Guardian, with a section supported by the Gates Foundation, The Washington Post, not The New York Times, Irin News, and Humanosphere. So, answer one, who reports humanitarian affairs consistently and originally? These 12. English language news organisations. Okay, our methodology here is a little limited because you need to have covered all four and that excludes several others. So, method two of answering our question, who covers humanitarian affairs, was to ask those who work in the humanitarian sector, in the aid sector, and those interested in it. So, in partnership with IRIN, we conducted a survey earlier this year asking just over 1,600 people affiliated with the aid sector, which news organisations do they rely on? Question one, which mainstream news organisations do they rely on to get their news? Three, above 50%, BBC World Service, The Guardian again, Al Jazeera again. Also this time, 45% relying on New York Times, and then we tail off. Washington Post appears again at 26%. So, once again, not very many news organisations, and the same names. Who reports on humanitarian affairs? This small number. Second question for 1,600 aid workers, where do you get your specialist sources of humanitarian news and analysis from? Slightly longer this time, but each one relied upon a lot less. Incidentally, as we conducted with this with IRIN, the result is a little meaningless, but they're still in here with the others. So, Relief Web, Thomson Reuters Foundation, Foreign Policy, UN Dispatch, DevEx. Let me try and pull out from that two things that I think are important for telling the story I want to tell. Point number one is that three of those news organisations don't produce original content themselves. They aggregate and recirculate other people's original content. So Relief Web does not produce any of its own content. It aggregates humanitarian news from elsewhere. So in general, so does Dawn's Digest. So they don't really fit our criteria of original news. The list is becoming shorter. The second thing to highlight is those news organisations that are primarily, if not exclusively, funded by foundations. Private foundations like, in the case of the blog by NPR, Goats and Soda, exclusively the Gates Foundation, News Deeply, several private foundations behind each of their platforms, UN Dispatch, the UN Foundation, Thomson Reuters Foundation, several foundations, and IRIN News as well, several foundations, but a few other sources of revenue as well. So, answer two, who reports humanitarian news? This is our second go at answering this question. And then our final answer, who produces humanitarian news? What's our starting point? What does the field look like? And what kind of news organisations are they? We asked UK audiences. So for this next one, we're relying on data kindly shared with us from the Dev Comms Lab by Will Tucker, David Hudson, and Jennifer Van Herd Hudson. They do a survey every year called the AIDS Attitude Tracker, asking 8,000 people in UK, France, Germany, and the US about their attitudes towards aid. And a few years ago, they asked them specifically where they get their news about international development from. And for those audiences in the UK who do at least occasionally consume news about international development, their key sources of information are BBC, clearly, 82% of those UK audiences who follow news about development get it online from the BBC, 82%. And then a significant amount also get it from BBC Online. ITV, a ways behind, interestingly, Channel 4 News, despite being one broadcast, one daily broadcast, 39% ahead of Sky News. Al Jazeera English, 14%. And then the same question, not about UK audiences' sources of news about development from broadcasters, but from newspapers. Here. Biggest source of information for people with at least some interest in development is actually local newspapers. In print, 33% of people with an interest or at least occasionally follow news about international development, they get it from local newspapers. Behind that, the only other one to stick out from a general average of 15% is, again, third time it appears, The Guardian, The Guardian has a section funded by the Gates Foundation about global development. Of course, it produces other international news, but it also has a strong focus on international development. Okay, that's a whistle-stop look through some headline numbers. In summary, who reports on humanitarian affairs? And just to hammer home the context here, we all saw the news coverage about climate change in the next 15 years. And we know that the number of disasters, depending to a degree on the amount of carbon we choose to emit or not emit, will be disastrous. There will be many times more disasters around the world than there are now. So another way of asking this question is, how well prepared are we to cover disasters around the world? Not very, or terribly. Who reports on humanitarian news? Virtually no commercial broadcasters routinely report on humanitarian affairs, apart from major disasters. And the occasional ones such as DevEx, a niche, relatively niche for the aid industry, commercial with a news arm. So very few commercial news organisations. Obviously the news agencies still report on these because that's where the commercial news outlets get most of their, or the vast majority of their coverage of humanitarian disasters from the news agencies, AFP, AP, Reuters and Xinhua. So apart from those four, where does humanitarian news come from? Well, really, Al Jazeera and BBC, most obviously sticking out in each one of these. And to a lesser extent, CGTN and Voice of America, who are interesting for other reasons. Outside of that, English language news, it's almost entirely foundation funded. The Guardian being the obvious example, I think the reason it sticks out above most of the other UK newspapers is because of the various reasons, but primarily the Gates-funded Global Development site. The other specialist news organisations could not exist without foundation funding. But the trouble with foundation funding, and it's so important we wrote a second report about it, so pick that one up on the way out, is it's unsustainable. Is that it's used almost entirely short term, 10 months, 2 years, 3 years at most, with expectations of not being carried on. So although Humanosphere was one of our 12, entirely reliant on foundation funding, it's closed. It closed this time last year because of a lack of foundation funding. News Deeply was for a long time our success story. The one small, relatively small niche international news outlet that's actually growing has just cut three or four of its strand of international news because of a lack of foundation funding. So foundation funding is filling a vital gap, but it's not currently the answer. So, in summary, who reports on humanitarian news? Very few news organisations. Very few. And the financial model is virtually non-existent. How well are we prepared to cover the effects of climate change? Okay, second question. We know who reports on humanitarian, or we have a better understanding of who reports, but how do they report on humanitarian events? And to sidestep the question that always gets raised about which disasters are not being covered, as Kate suggested, we're interested in who is covering humanitarian news and what does it look like and what are the differences. So, to answer this question, we looked primarily at how South Sudan and Yemen in 2017 were covered by our cluster of news organisations which we know do report on humanitarian affairs. The first thing to say is that they did all regularly report on Yemen and South Sudan whether or not there was breaking news to be had or not. So there is a small cluster of news organisations, very, very different news organisations, deliberately or otherwise, but they do report on these humanitarian affairs relatively consistently, not always with a news hook. So that second finding. But I thought you might also be interested to see the differences between how they report on these particular crises. So for more information, please spend time reading the report. But for now, I thought I'd draw out what the key voices heard in each news organisation and other features. So for BBC World Service, there is more emphasis on hard breaking news. And for them, the most common topic relative to others was conflict. The most common voices heard were affected individuals. CGTN also had a focus on hard news, but for them, government sources were the most important and international relations was the key topic. Then there were quite a lot of similarities between IRIN and Washington Post. Their focus was on aid and the delivery of aid and the effectiveness of aid and the lack of delivery of aid. And they were more critical alongside The Guardian, were more critical than others on the list. DevEx, one of the few commercially oriented organisations who report on these affairs. It was economics. Al Jazeera and The Guardian were really characterised just by plurality and diversity of topics and voices. So there are news organisations who report on humanitarian affairs regularly and originally. They are different from each other, but there's also gaps. The clearest gap was a lack of coverage of gender. This was in 2017 on reporting on South Sudan and Yemen. Understandably, perhaps there was also a lack of voices of affected citizens, though this is likely due to access. I'm sure our panelists can talk more about that. I debated whether or not to do this next slide, but as I'm up here and you're all listening, I'm going to do it. So the second way of getting at the question about the differences between different broadcasters, we did a separate study of the coverage of the Nepal earthquake in 2015. Because of the reliance of so many organisations on the news agencies for their coverage of disasters. We were particularly concerned with how Reuters and news organisations like it cover those disasters. Because for the vast, vast, vast majority of people, this is the story that they occasionally hear about disasters. So, in the Nepal earthquake, and there's a chapter you can read more about on, for Reuters, the main humanitarian actors are foreign governments and multilateral institutions. It was other governments. That's who provides humanitarian assistance. The Nepalese government, by contrast, was unable to cope, ineffectual, or getting in the way. And so the dominant framing device characterizing Reuters' coverage was conflictual. The international community is trying to provide aid, the government are getting in the way inadvertently. And that's the story of response to humanitarian disasters. This is our study of Reuters' coverage of one crisis, but it does reflect a relatively common narrative. We included IRIN News to see how else humanitarian disasters can be reported. Clearly, they have very, very different audiences, which explains this, but I want to put it on the table to emphasize my point. So for IRIN, it wasn't just foreign governments providing aid, it was local government, international NGOs, and local NGOs. The Nepalese government were just one of many humanitarian actors, and for IRIN, because of their focus on mostly the aid community, their concern was with effectiveness. As you're probably reading, the key thing to stick out was the representation of affected citizens. For Reuters, the focus was there was a more significant focus on foreigners, including trekkers. I read the chapter for more on this, which was less the case for IRIN. Clearly, they have different audiences, and they're telling stories to different audiences, and they have their rationales for it. But I'm interested in the consequences of this, because without other sources of news, that is the story that is being told by the international news. Okay, final question. Let's end on a slightly more constructive note, perhaps. What do audiences want from humanitarian news? Let me pick out two statistics which I think are interesting. The first comes from that Dev Comms Gap survey, the aid attitudes tracker of UK, US, French and German audiences. And they were asked, what kinds of international news do they follow? Do they follow international development? Very closely, fairly closely, not too closely at all, don't follow or don't know. So, in short, these audiences don't follow news about international development. Neither do they follow much news about climate change, more about human rights, more about political unrest. The most followed news for UK, for Western audiences, let's say, is about natural disasters. 45% claiming to follow fairly closely, 12% claiming to follow very closely, which is even more than foreign affairs coverage in general. This held consistent for political affiliation, left and right, for gender and for nationality, but older people were more likely to follow this news than younger people. So, it did hold for most variables. I said slightly more constructive. There is perhaps a light at the end of the tunnel here. And my favourite slide, the second bit of audience research was our survey with IRIN, asking now specialist audiences, those working in or affiliated with the aid sector. We asked them what kinds of news do they value, and what kinds of news are news organisations good at producing? Let me explain that better. We asked them, what is the most valuable form of news for those interested in or working in the aid sector? The most valuable for them is expert analysis, investigative reporting, consistent coverage, less valuable early warning solutions. Compared with an overall ranking of how well the news actually does these things. Let me highlight what I think are three interesting things. Number one, the news is very good at breaking news. But for those interested in those working in the aid community, this is far less important for them, for that particular audience. There's often a focus on solutions-oriented coverage. In a lot of interviews, people would talk about the importance of wanting to support solutions-oriented coverage. It was perceived to be the worst feature of humanitarian news, but not that highly valued by aid workers. The final one then that I'd highlight is investigative reporting. Very highly valued and not particularly well delivered. If you read the chapter that explains the differences a bit more stark than presented here. So the biggest difference for me is investigative journalism. So let me try and wrap this all up and then we'll lead into the panel. So our questions in summary. We are badly prepared. No, we're not. The news landscape for reporting on disasters is small and not well prepared for the future. Very few news organisations regularly produce original journalism about humanitarian affairs. Those that do rely on foundations. There is a lot to say, if you're interested, about their reliance on foundations. The two key points are, one, there isn't much foundation funding, so while it's significant for the news organisations, it's not for the foundations. Two, it's not sustainable. News Deeply has cut half of its strands and Humanosphere closes and other news organisations struggle. And three, it's incidental. Most foundations don't notice or pay hardly any attention to it. So it is it's a problematic source of funding. However, there are a relatively small number of news organisations who do report on this. They each have their own distinctiveness. There are differences between them. I've offered a crude characterization. Perhaps audience interest is greater than we imagine. And to leave a few thoughts, the key gaps, it seems to me, is coverage of gender in relation to humanitarian affairs, which I'm sure we can pick up on in a minute, and a lack of investigative reporting, particularly for those working in the aid sector. That was as much as I could fit in 20 minutes. If you give us longer, we'll write a book about it. We'll put more in it, we promise.
Fantastic. Okay, thanks, Martin. So I'm going to invite our panelists of journalists to come up and join.